Today joining me on R&IB Connect Radio is the founder of Esme's Umbrella, a campaign that aims to support people with Charles Bonnet Syndrome across the UK. Thank you for joining me, Judith. So why did you set up Esme's Umbrella in the first place?
Well, I set up Esme's Umbrella because Esme was my mum, and she was in her early 90s, lived a very independent life, was an incredibly independent lady altogether, and completed the Telegraph cryptic crossword every day, which is certainly more than I could do, continued to cook for herself and look after herself. And one day she said to me, "I do wish these people would get off my sofa." And I took a deep breath because, of course, there wasn't anybody on her sofa. And while I was thinking how on earth I should respond to that, she said, "And there's an Edwardian tear-stained street child who follows me everywhere, and a hideous gargoyle-like creature that jumps from table to chair, and sometimes a whole room or garden morphs into an alien place." Well, I had absolutely no idea what could be wrong with her. I mean, my first thought was dementia. And then I thought, well, no, it can't possibly be dementia. She completes this cryptic crossword. I knew she had glaucoma and I knew it had been diagnosed very late. But what I didn't realize was quite how much of her sight it had taken. And she was very good at compensating. So I went home, and with the most enormous piece of luck, that very day, I read a tiny paragraph buried in the health pages of one of the newspapers about a condition caused by loss of sight. And it was called Charles Bonnet Syndrome. And it could have been written by her. And I thought, marvellous. So rang her, said, "Don't worry, I know what this is. We'll sort it out." Rang the ophthalmologist. And that's where it all went wrong, because he refused to discuss Charles Bonnet Syndrome. He wouldn't talk to me about it. He wouldn't tell me why he hadn't warned us that it might happen. He just refused point blank to discuss it. Her GP had never heard of it, thought I was being fanciful. The optometrist had never heard of it. So, of course, I did what we are always told not to do. I went onto the internet, and there I found Dr., now Professor, Dominic Fitch at King's College London. And at that time, I was writing a health column for the Telegraph about cancer after a diagnosis that I had had. And I thought, you know, I'm going to write about Charles Bonnet Syndrome because nobody else seems to know about it. So I went to see Dominic, and he confirmed that that is what Esme had developed. He explained to me that when you have full sight, there are messages that run constantly from the eye to the brain. But when sight diminishes, those messages slow down or stop entirely. And for some reason that we still don't yet understand, the brain doesn't stop at that point. The brain fires up and creates its own images. And what is seen depends on which part of the brain is firing at that moment. So I thought, right, I'm going to definitely write about this, which I did. And I was inundated with emails from people who were very grateful to know that it wasn't a mental health condition, which was something that Dominic had stressed, who wanted more information or who just wanted to tell me their stories. And it was one of these stories which really persuaded me that I needed to do something. It arrived after Esme had died, and her last few years were plagued by hallucinations, which went on and on and on, and we could do nothing to alleviate them. And this particular email came from America, from a professor at a university who told me what had happened to her mother, who had been admitted to a dementia unit by the doctor because she was hallucinating worms and slugs on her food and in her drink. No one had heard of Charles Bonnet Syndrome. The lady couldn't get past these worms and slugs. She stopped eating and drinking and died. And that did it for me. So in November 2015, at the House of Commons, I launched Esme's Umbrella in memory of my mum and to raise awareness of Charles Bonnet Syndrome, to find ways to support people and their families, because living with it is difficult. Living with someone who lives with it is difficult. So I knew we had to do something, and particularly for children. And so the only thing I could do was also to source funding for research.
That's such a powerful story that you've just explained there, Judith. Why was it so misunderstood or just not acknowledged in the first place? And that's not even that long ago. You know, you're talking 2015. That's not long ago at all, is it?
Yes. Oh, yes. No, 2015, no one was talking about it. Well, Charles Bonnet lived in Geneva in the 18th century. And in 1760, he documented what was happening to his grandfather. Charles Bonnet was a very clever man, and he knew that the hallucinations experienced by his grandfather, Charles Lullin, were not from a mental health condition because his grandfather was totally sane. So that was in 1760, and nobody actually did anything about this condition until Professor Fitch started his work in the 1990s. It was touched upon in the 30s and in the 60s, but it was his work that started it. And I think the reason that no one talked about it was that as soon as someone develops it, they assume they have developed a mental health condition, so they say nothing. Because nothing is said, the doctors, the ophthalmologists, optometrists, GPs, they all assumed it was incredibly rare because they only heard about it from a few people, and they would have been elderly people. And so I'm afraid to say they were kind of dismissed and not, no one was concerned about them. So I think it was that vicious circle, really, that no one talked about it.
So, what kind of support can you give to people living with Charles Bonnet syndrome, and as you mentioned, to their families as well?
Well, the first thing I did was to create ESME room support groups, which were hosted by local low vision charities. People were invited in either to the charity or to somewhere that they took for the occasion. And people arrived, had a cup of coffee or a glass of wine, whatever it was, and exchanged experiences of Charles-Bonnet syndrome. And these grew very, very slowly because, of course, people were still reluctant to actually admit that they had this condition. But when COVID-19 hit, those all had to be shut because they were face to face. And it became clear within a week of lockdown that Charles-Bonnet syndrome was really affecting people in a very bad way, much more than normal. And there was one particular group at Liverpool, run by Mike Bailey at Christopher Grange and Bradbury Fields. And my email inbox was getting full of people saying help, as was my Facebook page. And Mike Bailey called me and said, "We have to do something because the people that were in my Esme's room group are now in desperate need because it's all got much worse." And at the same time, Louise Gow at the RNIB, who heads the iHealth team, who actually answers my helpline for me because it all became too much for one person, she also rang me and said, "I'm getting so many more calls." So we decided that we would morph the rooms into the Esme's Friends groups. And now we have, I think it's 28 or 29 around the country. The RNIB runs three. The need is so great for people to talk to each other, to exchange their experiences, to exchange coping strategies, and just to know that they're not alone. And particularly during lockdown, because isolation, stress, and fever actually make the whole experience much worse and cause people to see images which are much more frightening. Now, during that time, I spoke to Professor Maria Musaji, who is a consultant ophthalmologist at Moorfields at Great Ormond Street Hospital, Children's Hospital, and a geneticist at the Francis Crick. And I told her what was happening, and she immediately jumped into action And she and Dr. Lee Jones, who's a psychologist, conducted a piece of research. So we have established firmly, it's been peer-reviewed and published, that isolation and stress make Charles-Bonnet syndrome worse. So that piece of information I circulated to all the local low vision charities, and it was picked up and people joined in. And so the network has grown. So that is one of the things that we can do. What I would like to do also is to start a network for children with Charles-Bonnet syndrome, and another for their parents, and actually for caregivers as well, for adults. I realized very quickly, having spoken to Professor Fitch, that this can affect people of any age. So when I thought about how deeply distressed adults get about some of the hallucinations, I began to worry about what would be happening to children who would equally not be saying anything. So luckily, last year, Thomas Pocklington Trust gave some money, and Professor Mukherjee again and Dr. Lee Jones are doing a piece of research. We have established now, that's been peer reviewed and published, that children do get it. You have to peer review and publish everything for anyone to accept it as genuine. And now they are talking to the children, and they're doing an in-depth study to see the effect that Charles-Bonnet syndrome has on children and on the family. I have spoken over the years to quite a few parents who initially thought their children were inventing the hallucinations. Now, of course, they realize they're not. And when they realize they're not, they get very upset, as you can imagine, because you didn't believe your child, which is awful. So we're trying to get that information out there too, that children too can develop Charles-Bonnet syndrome in exactly the same way as adults.
It's that point, isn't it, that you've mentioned a few times of people not knowing what it is, coming to Esme's umbrella and realizing that it is a real thing, it's a serious thing, and that it needs to be taken seriously. Over the last sort of few months, probably due to the lockdown and the research that you've been doing, there's been a lot of attention on Charles-Bonnet syndrome. It was in the news. It's been featured on Coronation Street. Do you think that that's it impacted the way that the wider public see it, and do you think it'll help the way that people who have the syndrome deal with it in the future?
Yes, I do. When the scriptwriters of Coronation Street came to me last year, and under, pain of death, I was not allowed to speak about it. And I had the great pleasure of helping them with the scripts and talking to the actor Richard Hawley, who plays Johnny Connor. I knew that this would make a massive impact. I would have had to work 24 hours a day for the rest of my life to raise the awareness that those episodes, 8 episodes of Coronation Street, has done for Charles-Bonnet syndrome. And almost every meeting that I address now, people will say, "Oh, I saw it on Coronation Street." And these soap operas are amazing because they do take social problems and give them reality. And that is what has happened. And I have to say that one of the very first things that I did, with the help of Professor Andrew Dick here and Dr. August Koehlenbrander in America, was to persuade the World Health Organization that Charles-Bonnet syndrome should be given a coding of its own, which means it is a condition in its own right now, not just a side effect. And so ICD-11, which is the taxonomy of diseases and conditions, will be published this year, I think. And Charles-Bonnet syndrome is there. So now the NHS, once we're through the pandemic, will need to look at this and create a proper pathway for diagnosis, treatment, and support, particularly following all the research that is happening now, for which I have sourced the funding, Oxford University, Cardiff University, Manchester. We're hearing the end of the Newcastle research that will be published this year, the medical detection dogs, and there is just a great deal going on.
It's amazing what you've managed to do in such a short space of time, really, when you think about it, 6 years. It's incredible what you've managed to do. What are your plans as we come out of lockdown?
Well, I think my plan is to keep going. We need to help the RNIB have counsellors. I understand there is a waiting list for them. So what I would like to do is to find counsellors who will help Esme's umbrella. And I'm really looking for counsellors who are visually impaired themselves, because that will be kind of halfway there. And we know that counselling does help a great deal. The Macular Society have counsellors too. They're in groups. They do one-to-one as well. But I think having VI counsellors would be a really good way forward. So I'd like to do that. And I just need to raise as much money as I can to get as much research done as I can. And I would like also to reach out to America, to the big universities there with very deep financial pockets, and ask them to take this as seriously as we do here. We have started the research, the only research in the world, but we need help because we are a very tiny country. We don't have that much money. I certainly don't have any money, but those big universities do. And I think I have a colleague in America now who is a psychologist, and he works exclusively with the visually impaired. And he now hosts an Esme's Friends online chat group, chat and support group. And I know how many people there are in the USA who are in desperate straits and email me. I then put them in touch with him. But we need much more happening all over the world, because this is a condition which, unless we cure sight loss, will be around for a very long time.
Thank you so much for joining me, Judith, and taking the time to speak to us today. Where can we find out more about Esme's Umbrella and get involved in the support groups?
Well, there is my website, which has just been redesigned and refreshed and is now VI friendly. It is www. Charles Bonnet Syndrome, which is Charles Bonnet, Bonnet syndrome, dot UK. There's no co, it's just dot UK. And my email address, please email me, is Esme's Umbrella, all lowercase, no apostrophes, ESMES Umbrella at gmail.com. If you would like to speak to somebody on the eye health team at the RNIB, they answer my helpline. The number is 020 7391 3299. And if you want to speak to me, if you tell them, they will email me with your number and I will call you back. I answer all the emails myself.